Thorn area. We never go out of Barnsley area now. But one time.
Right. When you're charging them, it makes gas. Yeah. I'll show you that when they charge one. He then goes over, I'll point that out to you over here, but that gas, there's so much, when it comes back, to feed furnaces. To keep the ovens warm.
Yeah.
And when we're working normal, other half goes down to gas works down on it.
Yeah.
And it's shoved to Beeson Clark's gas works in Portobello Tony.
Now can't use any of this in home, this gas.
Used to be years back.
Used to be, but this used to
supply Royston and Dart. Years back. Well, not North Sea gas has it got right there. So what they do now, on normal working, on a day I think it's, what is it now, 100,000 an hour. We met up to 4 million cubic foot of gas a day. When they're looking normal, on full production.
Yeah.
And out up to 4 million cubic foot a day, I guess. With that pump in there. That used to... Right, feel them there. Can you feel them?
Yes.
Uh-huh. So,
hello.
These here.
Yes.
Every so often, every half an hour, look, they call it changeover. There's a machine at end there.
Yeah.
And it starts and it pulls these big ropes.
Yes.
And it puts so many on gas.
Hmm.
And takes rest off. Mm-hmm. Every 8 hour the changeover, what they call a changeover.
Mm-hmm.
It'll take so many off of gas.
Well, what burns when gas is not doing
it? Just itself? Just itself, and then it comes back on, the rear up it over every 8 hour.
Cheers.
Nanos?
Yeah.
And they're in the only heat, but that's
got to
continually put gas back onto them.
Yeah.
So they come over every 8 hour.
It's
a machine.
So this opens it for gas to go in
And it shuts some. It shuts some. And opens others up.
Yeah.
As I said, this but it's marked, well, that's it, length it runs. Right up there. And it just pulls them over. It's got some power to it.
Yeah. It just opens doors. Furnaces up there to stop the gas and also to let gas go in again.
Yeah.
Every so often it says, let's shut them off.
Them's off.
Just let it burn on its own.
It's them caps up there.
Yes.
Them's off the gas. That
gas.
One there, is on it shut.
What is on that? This opens your door.
Can you see that? That's off gas now.
Yeah.
That is on. Well, when it goes over next down, it will shut these and open them.
Yeah.
I don't think this is Joe for going over here.
No.
Well, as I said, then there, you can see them.
Look at them, you two. Look at them. Is the microphone sterk? Waar zit hij?
Ah,
ja. Ah ja, wacht even. This is where the strike started here in Cottonwood. Cottonwood. Why did it start here?
Why did it start here? Because they were going to close this place down.
When was that?
They gave us 5 weeks. We were supposed to
be
officially closed on 6th of April, weren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next year.
This year. They came one morning and said, right, that's it, in 6 weeks' time, that's it, the colliery's finished.
Six weeks.
They gave us 6 weeks' notice that the colliery was going to be shut, and that was it.
We came out on strike on the 3rd of March.
Who decided that? The workers here?
Yeah.
They all decided.
The workforce decided
that. Not the union, but the workers.
The workers decided that.
Yeah. And then what happened? Other miners in this area?
No, we went through to York. We went through to Barnsley NUM on the Monday after we had our vote on the Sunday to come out of work. We went through to Barnsley NUM and lobbied Barnsley area NUM.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided to fetch all Yorks out Monday after.
Yeah.
So in 7 days, us being out on strike, we were all Yorkshire out.
All Yorkshire area were out on strike.
All Yorkshire area.
Yeah, then it just escalated then, to Kent and places like that.
Yeah.
Apart from Nottingham.
Nottingham.
What's the problem from Nottingham then?
Well, they
at Nottingham said they didn't have a vote on pit closures.
Didn't care about
Yorkshire did.
Don't they have a vote or They won, they won.
They said they hadn't had a ballot.
They said they hadn't had a ballot on it. Mm-hmm. But the Yorkshire area did have a ballot in 1981 on pit closures. Yeah. We've got 98% of pit closures.
But you see, it really...
If a pit closed, everybody goes on strike. That was right.
In the Yorkshire area.
Yeah, in Yorkshire, but not in Nottingham.
But what Nottingham's been arguing about them having a ballot,
mm-hmm.
3 weeks since they had a ballot in North Wales.
Yeah.
Right? And ballot vote won. Out on strike. They'd been out on strike, right?
Yeah.
And 3 weeks since they decided to have a ballot at their own pit in North Wales.
Is he a hook?
Continue.
They decided to have their own ballot in North Wales.
Yeah.
But you see, the point.
And the ballot was going to keep out on strike, but they all went back to work.
But
they all went back to work. So what? These in Nottingham said that if they had a ballot, they'd have come out.
Yeah.
But them in North Wales didn't, so...
Yeah, but really, it doesn't affect Nottingham, because Nottingham's a booming industry and they've got all their coal. So why should they... The argument that they'd got was that they were voting not to strike because they were all right, Jack, so it were, I'm all right, jigger you.
There were a man come to work with me, or we come picked up here, there were a man come to work with me from Elsica.
Yeah.
It had just been shut down, Elsica. How long before that, Tommy?
About a month, Christmas.
Just before Christmas.
And he come to work with us, and he was 55, and Coldwood, pretty much Coldwood, because he was guaranteed 5 more years' work.
5 more years' work, yeah.
He's been here a fortnight.
Yeah, and then...
He closed it down within 6 weeks. And then they turn around and expect us to believe what Coldwood says.
Yeah, yeah.
So, there's no chance.
Pardon? Yeah. But according to the press,
they were dead.
In this last week,
yeah.
Cortonwood is making a profit.
It's making a profit, yeah.
It was making a profit,
yeah.
So it wasn't on
the
financial.
But it was not making a profit.
No. There's some economists done a survey, haven't they?
Yeah.
And they were going to publish something in last month's paper, a paper that they have. And the coal board squashed it because it was convicting against their quotations.
Yeah.
And apparently it's going to be published in the next month's issue. And they said that the coal board said we were making a loss of £6 something a ton. And these economists have worked out that we're making a profit of £5 odd a ton.
Yeah.
So the coal board's figures are all wrong.
But why? Did they want to close it down then?
Well, I do want to close it down because they decided that in South Yorkshire area they've got to lose so many thousand tons, right?
Yeah.
Just for instance, 25,000 tons. They've got to lose 25,000 tons because they were getting 25,000 tons production too much in South Yorkshire area.
Yeah.
Now rather than take 1,000 ton off one pit, and 2,000 ton off another pit, and so much off another pit, they decided, right, we'll take it off one pit and we'll close Cortonwood. And that's why they decided to close Cortonwood.
Yeah.
Well,
Van
looking at there.
That's why.
Well,
they'll take
Van
number
now.
That's why they decided to close Cortonwood, isn't it?
Er gebeurt helemaal niks.
Niks.
Shit. Ja? Violence going on, but very few people have actually been charged with offences of violence. And the most common charges are things of threatening behaviour or obstruction of the highway or obstruction of a police officer. It's very easy for them to get convictions on that basis.
Yes.
At the moment, it's fairly clear that what they do is get. They've rarely ever done it.
Yeah.
And as I say, I've only ever had one phone call. And it was just clear that if you were a minor, you didn't have any rights. None at all. And they weren't going to let you have any rights.
And you said something about in the phone call.
That you have to come in court before court?
Without a solicitor?
Well, we've
without
got...
Without having seen one?
We've got two guys who are in court who I have in fact seen a solicitor. They've come back for an interim, what we call an interim hearing, which is just another appearance before the court. And it's really done to inconvenience the lads, rather than to actually further the court process. Because all it means is somebody comes before a court, and the court says, are you such and such? And he says, yes. And they say, well, off you go again. You've still got your bail conditions, you know? And the guys are thinking, what the hell is all this? Oh, but we've got to have a solicitor there, just in case the prosecution or the court try to pull some strokes on this guy whilst he's there. What happened was, I was informed that there's two guys in a court and the solicitor hasn't arrived yet. That occasionally happens. I think it's happened about a dozen times during the whole dispute. Normally, we generally have it well covered and fairly well organised. But this is also part of the problem that we have in West Yorkshire at the moment with them moving people from one place to another, because the solicitors are chasing their arse all over the place. And it may be that the solicitor who was meant to be representing those guys has actually got to a police station where they've let him see somebody.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, he's going to be you can't leave that police station, you can't miss the opportunity.
So
he'll concentrate his activity in that police station, seeing the guy. And if it means two people appear in court without a solicitor, well, it's just tough shit, basically. It may be that he's simply forgotten about them. Highly unlikely. There's probably some explanation for it. It's not particularly important. The guys are not up for a trial. There isn't any trial going to take place. So, strictly speaking, they're not particularly in any danger.
Court waiting for somebody to represent them.
You said solicitors cost an awful lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
Don't do it cheaper as normal, or are they not?
Oh yeah, the vast majority of solicitors are charging us less than their normal £50 an hour. I mean, solicitors' charges vary. Legal aid rate is about £32 an hour for a solicitor. So, and if each trial, say, on average lasts for a day, for every picket, and call that 8 hours work. That's a lot of money. Plus the fact that in the majority of cases they need to see the person who's been arrested and they need to see his witnesses prior to ever having the trial.
So far we've
managed to obtain legal aid in about 40% of the cases, which is actually better than I ever thought it would be. But that's going down rapidly. Getting less and less now. Mainly as a result of this instruction that's gone to the courts from the Lord Chancellor. We're looking at spending millions. And it cost us millions.
You said that this didn't affect only the NUM. It affects how it goes.
Well,
other groups, other activists, other people.
For other groups, it hasn't.
What do they do?
For other groups, up to this dispute starting, there hasn't really been particularly a case of mass arrests. There's been one or two instances where there have been mass arrests, such as the pickets which occurred at Grunwick some years ago. There were several hundred arrested as a result of that.
Stop the city, actually?
The Stop the City demonstrations have been a situation where there's been a large number of arrests. Basically, if there was a Stop the City demonstration in Leeds today, and you guys walked into Leeds, they'd arrest you. Damn near on site. One of the solicitors I use has done a lot of work for people who've been arrested on Stop the City. He's had to do it for free, because none of them got legal aid, not
what
one.
What do we do about them? Bring them back at
and he don't mind. I mean, he's politically committed. Some of the solicitors, however.
Get someone there.
might like not to charge us some, but they have to because they're giving so much time to it. They've got firms to run, staff to pay, and if they're doing it for free, they're very quickly going to run out of money. And in fact, solicitors' overheads are very high, notwithstanding the fact that they invariably pay their staff lousy wages. Generally, solicitors' overheads are quite high. Some solicitors are doing it on the basis of, in those cases where they get legal aid, screwing as much as possible out of it. Don't quote me on this anymore. And then not charging us as much, or just charging us token amounts and making it up from the legal aid. But having said that, the criminal side of it, the fact that people have been charged, is not just the problem. We've got situations where pickets have received very serious injuries at the hands of the police. A large number of them might not be able to work after this strike is over. They can't work. They're going to want some sort of compensation. And we're going to have to try and get them in. And to run civil claims against the police in this country costs a fortune. To run one civil claim might involve us in £10,000 worth of costs. To
when you win it?
And the chances of winning are very slim. Very, very slim. I think last year someone was telling me that for complaints against the police, we have a system in this country where there's no point in making a complaint against the police because they investigate it themselves and they decide whether or not they're going to take any action about it. I think last year there was something like 16,800 complaints made against the police and they took action on six. Six, as a result of 16,800 complaints, six police officers were taken to court.
And nothing happened to them?
I don't think any of them were convicted. Basically, being a copper in this country is virtually a license to do anything you like.
And
more or less guarantee you'll get away with it. One of the lads that's working taking statements for me used to be a copper. And he spent 2 years in the police at Wakefield. It's not you, is he? In the course of 2 years, he had about 200 complaints made against him. And that made him very popular with the police. I mean, I get the impression he was a bit of a bastard in the way of the police. So much so that they were getting a lot of heat about him that the Metropolitan Police offered him a job. They contacted him, you know. I mean, they want people like that. They want folks. Fortunately, however, Jeff seen the error of his ways. He turned to mining, and he's done a lot of bloody good work for us, and worked very hard. It's a very useful experience for us to have on tap. But in my own dealings with the police, even before working for the NRM, the police in this country are just so corrupt. I mean, this sort of international view of the British police being wonderful. It's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I've had situations of police officers, senior police officers, coming into my office when I, on a particular case I was defending, and telling me that I was doing too good a job and I'd better ease up if I knew what was good for me. That sort of stuff. Fortunately, I had a tape recorder running. I said, thank you very much, lads. You see that machine there? See those little things going round? That's a tape recorder, and I've got you down. And these bastards went white and couldn't get out of my office fast enough. What in fact had happened was the receptionist had rung through, telephoned through to me, and said some police officers are coming through to see you. I told them to wait, but they wouldn't. And one of my mates was a drummer in a band, and he'd given me this tape to listen to. He'd recorded it the night before at a gig that they'd been at, and I'd been listening to that. So as soon as I got this call, I just turned the tape down. So in fact, I was playing the tape, I wasn't recording. But they didn't know that. And I had those bastards by the short and curlies for a long time. But that, in another case, they tried to set me up as having destroyed material evidence. Actually trying to set me up for it. Gets halfway through your case, it becomes clear that certain things, a certain bits of evidence are missing. And they said, we supplied this to the defence solicitor, so you can have forensic test carried out on it. And he's destroyed them or stolen them. I mean, they tried to set me up. Unfortunately, I had an idea that they might be doing that, so I covered myself. In fact, I'd never had them in my possession. When they were handed over, I said, give them to him, who was the defence barrister. And I never touched them. They were taken from there to a safe at a different solicitor's office. They were taken from that state by that solicitor with me in his presence, taken to the forensic guy, and we never saw them again until they were brought back to court by the forensic guy. So I was able to prove that it was all a lot of bollocks. Fortunately, the guy was acquitted as well, so I didn't do them any good. But even in the course of that case, one of the police officers who was lying about throwing petrol bottles, I mean, this guy faced like 12 years inside if he'd been convicted. They'd set him up, the whole, he'd never done it. He'd never been anywhere near it. In court, this copper spends 2 hours just telling a pack of lies and we could prove it. You've been told by a judge to go to a particular area of the town where this petrol bomb's supposed to be thrown, because when they found out they had evidence to show that no petrol bomb had been thrown in a particular street at a particular, on a particular night, it blew that evidence blew that whole case. And we had 360 witnesses lined up. Everybody who lived in that street, I'd subpoenaed them to come to court to give evidence, so that no petrol bombs were thrown. Plus the fact I had evidence from insurance companies, from local authority, from damn near everybody. So there would be no claims for damage, all that sort of thing. So he says, oh no, it happened in a different street. I'm new to the area, I don't know the area. I was called in from a different town just to work that night. So the judge says, oh well, in that case, you better get your bearings. Go from this court now, go and have a look and come back. And he continues to give more evidence. So I didn't follow him. As he went out, I nipped out and followed a mate of mine who was a training solicitor, effectively. And I said, see that copper? Go and follow him, you know? And this guy pops out and jumps into his car and follows this copper in the car. And what he did was he went to a pub, whipped inside, had a quick arm, came out and came back. And he never even went. And of course, we spend an hour asking him more questions, knowing quite well that he's lying through his teeth, and then we told him we had him followed. You know? And the guy tried to hit me.
He did?
This fucking police sergeant. He walked out of the court, he was crying, and his mate will pat him on the back saying, oh, never mind, lying. And as the jury were filing out, I deliberately whipped in front of this copper and started laughing at him. And it had the desired effect, the bastard tried to hit me in an open court. And all his mates piled upon, jumped on him to stop him. But of course the jury saw all this, and by then the police case was completely blown. But that's just one example of what is going on all the time. The police are like that all the time. I used to specialise in drugs defences. And that was really funny, because every client I got, and I'd had hundreds over the few years I was there, the police always said the same thing about it. Their statements were always in the same words. I didn't used to, when I got police statements, I got to the stage where I didn't bother looking at them. I'd just throw them on the floor and I'd say to my client, look, the police are saying, you said, blah, blah, blah. And most of them were out of a word processor. And they were invariably lying. But you see, in this country, confession evidence can either be a written statement signed by the defendant, and they can get that easy enough simply by intimidating him and getting him to sign a blank piece of paper, and then they write in what they want. Or they can, what they call verbal somebody, and what they do is say two coppers make up what they think a conversation would be good for them. Charge the guy, and then blow them out. And the first he knows that he supposedly made these admissions is when I get copies of the police statement saying that.
Yes.
But that's admissible as evidence and is sufficient in itself to convict people for offences as serious as murder. So, just two copies standing there saying this man admitted he would. And that's admissible. I mean, there's a lot of countries where that would not be admissible as evidence. It wouldn't be admissible, say, in the United States. In the States, that type of evidence is only admissible in the sense that it can only verbal a man. The statement he made immediately on his arrest, if he says anything 5 minutes after that, they can't refer to that in court unless he's signed it. And I think the situation is pretty much the same in France. It's non-verbal people, it's got to be signed. And like 90% of the convictions that the police obtain in this country are based on verbals. And in fact, they rarely, if ever, have any hard evidence. And the corruption is just so rife, they're just so bent. Because promotions for the police are based on their conviction rate.
Convictions.
Yeah. And the other way you can get promoted in this country is be such a bastard that they promote you out of trouble. And that's what the lawyers are having to deal with. Not a very pleasant situation. But the international image of the British police is so wrong. They're absolute bastards, and if they decide they want to give you a hard time, they will give you a hard time, no mercy. And I mean, there was a case not so long ago where a man was charged in Leeds with criminal damage to a police officer's boot. The allegation was that in the course of a struggle between the police officer and this defendant, the police officer decided it would be favourite for him to kick this guy. So he kicked him in the face so hard that it tore the sole off his boot.
Oh.
And the only thing that this guy was charged with was criminal damage to the police officer's boot. And he was convicted.
Yeah.
He was convicted.
He was convicted.
You know, even that. We've actually got a guy who has been charged with criminal damage to a police officer's truncheon. All right. The apparent allegation is that he attacked this police officer and damaged his truncheon whilst he was trying to stick a nut on him. You know, whilst he was trying to headbutt him. And they charged him. That's the sort of thing we get. And invariably, if the police beat somebody up to cover themselves, they will charge the person they've beaten up with an offence of assault on a police officer or actual bodily harm on a police officer, and then do everything they can to make sure he's convicted. That way they don't get any heat back, and they can say, well, we were justified in causing these injuries to this man because he was trying to do the same to us. And this was the only way we could prevent it. So basically, if you get beaten up by the police, there's a 99% chance that they'll charge you with beating them up. And there's just hundreds of guys in that position. One of the blokes I had working here for me taking statements was beaten up by the police on a picket line, very small picket line. Milder mannered man you couldn't meet. You know, he was just so mild tempered. He was beaten up by the police. Quite badly. And a few days after, he was arrested and charged with threatening behaviour. A few days after, he made a complaint about what the police did to him. All of a sudden, within days, he was charged with actual bodily harm on a police officer and assault PC on another one. And they stitched him up when he got to court. They were so well rehearsed in their evidence that the guy had no chance, and he was convicted. And he's currently in the third week of the 6-week sentence. So now I simply advise people not to make complaints against the police, because other instances of people who complain have led to police officers coming out of their house at 2 o'clock in the morning to interview us and harassing the witnesses to the incident, which was the subject of the complaint. And in half a dozen cases, as a result of a complaint being made, where a guy was, say, not arrested or charged at the time, the guy's been charged. There was one bloke, saw a copper rip a telephone out of a public phone box. So he went to make a complaint. And he was charged with criminal damage to the telephone. Absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. Of course, their behaviour goes a bit worse than that. I mean, we do have cases where the police have physically tortured people. In the sense of a systematic attempt to cause either physical or, well, generally both, psychological pain over an extended period of time. And that's been going on. And, of course, the British police are wonderful. I'd love to meet you.
Well, they first day they came, they didn't do anything. This day?
Really?
This morning, when you all came, they came around back, they were trying to get you out. That first morning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Until we'd all that inspected and you stopped it.
Yeah.
That first morning, Thursday, Easter morning. Well, they came around to take you out there. Mm-hmm. We told them, like, if they stopped it, they didn't do that. They were really a couple of them, but basically, you all did. They were not like that. Mm-hmm. We did not do all week. First day there's some strangers here, the next
one we're going. It's a problem now, they've got the same police online every day.
Mm. They get to know you.
They get to know you, they get to know you. They get to know you, because I've for 3 weeks, the same police, the last two now, 3 weeks. But it's very difficult now to keep, because they've got you straight away, you walk out, you recognise them. It's very difficult. Yeah, so your dates are very little. You know, I've had to quietly jump, otherwise I would have been it. There's no two ways. So you've got to be quiet.
You apologised to us this morning for disturbance yesterday.
Yeah.
You expected, yeah.
Yeah.
We know. Who did it? Bobby, who did it? We know it. And this, we told you all about it this morning. And you went your way, right? We had you back in the office. And he came and apologised. We know him. This is okay. He says, I'll find out. He knows who it is, right? He says, I'll find out who it is and I'll tell him to stop it. Came right back, push our men into their men for them men to do it. Not an idea. That's a new tactic I've seen before as well. I'm setting it up. I've not seen him come right back to set it up. I've seen one of that's pushed and then him coming. But they came in first this time.
Well, I've seen that happen before.
They came in first. Oh, just one, really. Scrum down, took some lads for it. And then, of course, they came at us. This is key. Anyway, thank you for your time, Jimmy. You've been very helpful for these ones. Right.
Hope I'm
wrong. I'll take them down to the junction now and see what other item of industries.
One question. When you lose a trial, you have to pay the cost of the trial. How much?
It's an interesting question. Invariably, yes, the bloke, as well as being fined, is ordered to pay prosecution costs.
Yeah.
When we win, invariably, the prosecution don't have to pay ours.
Yeah.
Prosecution.
There's only a couple of dozen instances where they've been ordered to pay our costs.
It's when you win, who pays?
Well, either legal aid does, if legal aid was granted, or we do.
Yeah. And when you
so win. Even when you win, you can still be stuck with a bill of 500 quid.
Still boss.
But yeah. When you lose, how much money will it cost?
Well, it depends. Not every case is the same.
Normal.
Depends how long it was in court.
It was.
But you're looking at an average of about 270 quid
Hello?
Per person.
Yes, can I help you?
But of course, what's it can go up to as much as 1,000,
mm-hmm.
or but very rarely below 170. Very rarely.
It's all paid by the mill.
Sorry?
The cost of the process trial is paid by the mill.
Well, If we lose and we don't get an order for costs, if we win and we don't, and the magistrates don't make an order for costs in our favour, what happens is the police stand their own costs, but we still have to pay our solicitor. And it's, there's just not many instances where they've made an award of costs in our favour. But in virtually every case where the guy is convicted, he has to pay the cost of the prosecution.
Yes.
And having said that, they don't necessarily always order as much as the prosecution asks for.
Yeah.
The prosecution may ask for about 150 quid, for an example. And they may only order that the defendant.
If it's gone really for you,
take that on top of the fine and say
which is best for you.
Plus our own costs of say 300
pounds. Yeah. Well,
starts costing a hell of a lot of money.
If I don't have to be in that particular day, because I'm down here on Monday, Thursday, Friday.
We have no alternative.
And if I'm not in that particular day, you can leave it with reception.
And they know that. It's one way they deliberately set out to drain the funds of the union.
Yeah, they arrest people to intimidate them and to get the money.
Well,
has
it's been going on quite a few months
and it's pressed on to the bars again, and it costs us a fortune. And laughing all the way to the bank. It's marvellous. But our policy is that we will provide the very best legal help that we can.
Well, what they're doing is you require details.
And I think that's quite right.
And she said,
because if we're going to say we're picketing, we're putting them in a position whereby
if you don't,
the chances are
they will get arrested.
We're obliged to do something. We couldn't just leave them on air.
So,
how many people work in the...
Ladies, about
20.
About
20,
yeah.
All women?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All women?
Oh, no!
Nearly all women.
Mainly women.
How did it all start? When did it start?
Well, there was an advertisement in the Chronicle, our weekly Chronicle, what we get for Barnsley, and with an advertisement asking women, miners' wives, to a meeting. And we formed ourselves from this meeting.
It's in the beginning of the strike.
Well, how it started, my next door neighbour actually and myself talked about it, because we hadn't heard about Barnsley Group starting up. We wanted to do something in our own area. Just talking casually, I realised that we both felt exactly the same. We arranged to meet the union, strike committee, at Royston Drift. And from there we put out a poster into shops and pubs and things and asked ladies to meet. And we were really surprised at the response that we actually got, and we just took it from there. They've had it, and they started fundraising straight away. Didn't open the kitchen straight away, of course, until we actually had, you know, funds to start buying food.
Did you have trouble finding a place to work the kitchen?
No trouble at all.
Council offered straight away.
Because it's Labour Councilling, so they've been...
How do you finance it?
All sorts of things. We'll tell you that one.
Well, we went to individual shopkeepers and asked them to donate something. It needed to be money. We said they could donate something that we could raffle off to get money. And we did very well. We had a good response. All shopkeepers donated it as a prize, something that we could raffle off. One or two donated money. And we went into courts and did raffles. And it all mounted up from there. Now we do raffles every week in clubs.
Do they give regularly gifts?
Most people.
I have loads of people donating. Yeah, a lot of people keep donating. Yeah. Well, no couple that donates the money every other week, isn't it?
Yeah.
The old miners have been really good.
I think as biggest, everybody's been good, but we did a sponsored walk.
5 weeks.
We did all this organised. We did a sponsored walk. We walked
10 miles.
And collected on his way, and then also local pub, we had stalls and sing along at night time, and a pie and piece up, and we had a really good response from that.
You organise things for money to get money.
When
you can't get enough.
We had money a couple of times, but generally when we've been low, then we've ended up
getting something out, like a sponsored walk or a concert or something like that, that's going to bring, quite a deal. We all got dressed up and walked around.
How many times a week do you cook?
We have as many as 250. We always work it out on cater for about 250.
That's all.
And besides this, do you, are you involved in other things concerning the strike?
We've been on lots of different rallies, and we have been picketed at our own pit. And also Wayne, being in Barnsley, not an electric person, so security and things like that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All sorts of things. If we're not, if kitchen's not open, other days are taken up with fundraising, really. Most nights. Reads around because Rita is now a scrounger.
What's
a scrounger? A scrounger is somebody that goes and asks for things. Yeah. Ah. She's our beggar.
I think on December 8th at Pack Horse, I think you were in there last night.
Yeah.
Well, we're doing a carol singing night there. In the afternoon we've got stalls and we're hoping to raise about £800
because that's the next big thing that we've got is to try and get counters and
toys
for the kids for Christmas we must make the Christmas for them.
Do you have any plans in your head for doing more days?
We have two up at Rail.
Is it a special group among the miners who eat here every day?
No. You get your regulars and everyone's coming in.
But always
because it's just like the same people.
Is it always the same people?
No.
We do get same people, but sometimes
No. Anybody from any pit can come from here.
And a lot of children.
Yeah, wives and children.
Striking miners in the families.
But if kids are going free school meals, then we ask them to let them go to school for the free school.
Oh, they have food.
But we cater for children under school age.
Yeah, that's six.
Five.
How do you manage financially in your own household?
We're great.
It's hard.
Very hard.
All your savings is gone.
All your savings.
All your time. Oh, that's it.
Thank you.
Especially such as me and Jean, we both work in Pitt Canteen. Both our husband works at Pitt.
Yeah.
So we don't.
So they haven't
we
can't
get any income whatsoever.
No.
From Social Security.
No.
But as for saying that, being a part of this group, we've all said, really helps us.
It does. You know, you can get depressed.
You can come down here and feel, oh, I'm fed up and I haven't got this. And everybody else is same, so you can talk about it. Every time you go out, you cheer yourself up and everything, because you realise there's always somebody else that little bit worse than you somewhere, you know, and it really is a good help.
Yeah.
If we're really depressed, we all shout at Glenda.
Yeah.
She gets all shouting. She's heard that.
Furniture.
She gives you 10 times as much back.
It is hard work, but we enjoy it.
We enjoy it. That was another reason for forming the group, really, so that there would be that spirit between everybody else. You know, you all know that you're exactly the same, so you know, it's a great feeling between us. You know, get you away from, well, just sitting at home and thinking about it. You don't think about him while you're asleep, just go home and think about him.
We now have this morning a telephone bill come.
By the time
I got down here, I got stuck in tips up and all stuck. I couldn't get down there.
It's an electric house.
Oh,
I
think that's
the electric is a big thing. There's another duo just before Christmas. There's a light bill duo, isn't
there? Christmas card.
The electric, yeah, that always comes
from Christmas. I just think electric. Generators of gas.
Yeah.
It's times like that when bills come in that
it's depressing.
You know you haven't got the money to pay them.
Then you come down here and everybody's got a reminder. Or they come in and you know, and say, oh,
yeah,
you need to pay
them. Yeah,
you need every quarter.
Everyone
passes over.
Yeah.
With bills coming in.
Just take every day.
There's all your different utilities.
Yes,
your electricity, your gas, telephone if you have it, your rate.
That's
right.
All this comes for Christmas.
You've all these.
All for Christmas.
We always get somebody else.